Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you opinion and our commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, May 9th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Hey, TGIF.
Yep.
There's one every week.
I understand.
How about
I think
that?
They should pass a law to make it two.
You think?
Should be at least two Fridays and two Saturdays, one Sunday.
Two Saturdays, one Sunday.
Well, By the time we're done, we'd only have maybe one Wednesday.
Then we
when
become
an actual work day out of the week, that would be a Wednesday.
Then we become like the French. And
maybe
for
so.
All the French listeners out there, there's nothing wrong with that. But gold, it was a little Frenchy today. Not a lot of movement in gold. Had a lot of pressure early on in the day. 1290 on the New York spot price. 1290, just below a buck for the change. Silver was down a couple cents today. 1923 did break into 18 temporarily, but 1923. Platinum was down $4 at 1433. Now. This is the third time that both platinum and palladium, when I'm giving the numbers, are exactly the same. Both platinum and palladium were down $4. How does that work, folks? How does that work? So, I guess the guy
sort
that's
of economy. It's an economy measure. They've decided they need less people. If they make all the numbers the same, then they don't have to hire as many people to write and calculate what the numbers might be.
But they should be, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a labor-saving device. It'll cut costs, and they'll be able to sustain the racket at just that much longer.
Just confirms my notion that there's just someone sitting there behind a curtain typing the numbers. What are we going to do today? The USDX today was stronger, 0.43, still 79.88. Would have been a good time to short the euro. A couple days ago, it was 140. Earlier today, I saw it was just a little over 137. So that was a pretty nice dip in the euro. And surprising that with that type of a dip, you only saw this 0.43 on the USDX for the dollar. So just interesting. Crude oil today, 100.06. And the paper markets today. You know, the Dow finishes at a record closing high. That should make people feel real good during the Mother's Day weekend as they're visiting their parents and their mothers. They can talk about the Dow hitting a record closing high, up 32 points at 16,583. The NASDAQ and the S&P both ended lower for the week. The NASDAQ was up 20 at 4,071, and the S&P up 2 at 1,878. And the 10-year yield is back up over 260 at 2.62%. Well, Al, it looks like the Republicans are getting on the bandwagon. Maybe now they think if they can go along with the Democrats, maybe they have a chance to get elected. But you have Republicans now coming out who want to back minimum wage hike. So they want to support the increase and get on the Democrat and Obama's bandwagon to raising minimum wage. Do you think it'll work for them?
Oh, I think it's just more political.
Of course.
Subterfuge, that's all. I mean, we're coming into the election, and everybody is going to scramble to be whatever it is they think the public wants them to be. They're like chameleons. And they'll be anything the voters want them to be. At least that'll be their appearance up until the election. And then after the election, then forget the voters. They'll go back to doing whatever it is they want to do. But for the moment, the Republicans are going to be lower class's best friends. They're going to work to raise minimum wage, going to work to raise employment, going to do all kinds of good deeds. Later, they will be, after the election, they will be the best friends of the people who gave them the most money, as will the Democrats. Yeah. But right now, next few months, they'll be on their good behavior.
Well, it'll be an interesting next few months.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be another one of those things. Test the gag reflex, you know?
I know.
Keep thinking, oh, Lord.
I know. What I found, I think, one of the most interesting articles, and it doesn't have anything to do with finances, but it does have something to do if you believe we're in a spiritual battle. And it just surprises me. There was two articles, one out of the Boston Harvard University. They're going to have a reenactment of Black Mass. And this is one of their classes. They're holding this event. They're saying it's educational. And it's just like, what?
Well, you know, I can understand. I can kind of understand that this is educational. And it might be educational, you know, from a historical point of view, to maybe have burn some witches at the stake. How about that?
It's just, again, it's just a sign of where we're at. And there is also going to be an atheist cable station.
Yeah.
And it's, these two hosts have been doing programs for a long time, but this is their first opportunity to get on cable. And so it will be all atheists. It's just like
all atheists all the time.
Calling all atheists. But I don't know. It's just disturbing, not surprising. And, you know, with our decline of Christianity, certainly you're going to see a rise in Satanism. And, you know, if we want to fix this country, it's going to have to change. But
I agree. It's one of those things, and very few people appreciate the idea how important your fundamental values are to your liberty, your freedom, your tax rates, the probability that you will live a prosperous life or you will live as a peon. It goes back to fundamental values. It goes back to spiritual values that a lot of people just, oh, we don't need that. That's in the Bible. What's that got to do with economics? What's that got to do with prosperity or liberty or freedom? No, it's fundamental. And very few people appreciate that anymore, and that's part of the reason why we are in a state of decline.
Mm-hmm.
And we will have a decline, and those of us who survive down at the bottom of the decline, a whole bunch of atheists are going to get religion. And when they do, and the world begins to turn around and we begin to appreciate that maybe it's not such a good idea to have a satanic mass, you know, you can't really complain about it. We see it in the movies, you know, I don't, you know, it's one of those things. It's
Well, I'm not quite sure, sir, how many people actually send their kids to Harvard expecting them to participate in a black mass.
Depends on whether they're going to join Skull and Bones.
Of course, this is Harvard, so yeah, it's not the same as, you know, your little community college either.
Yale has Skull and Bones, don't they? Isn't it Yale? In any case,
one of them. Premier it's either
college.
Harvard.
Yeah, it's Skull and Bones.
Skull and Bones.
But they're doing it to get rich, you see? So that makes it okay, Melody. It's not as if they're not turning their back on God. They're just loving money. That's all. Got to get out there and get it.
And it's another, it's in your face. We're here. That's how I view it. We're here. And this is the way it will be.
We'll see how they do. And we'll see how they do. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you talk about we're here and the rest of that sort of thing. That was first phrased by homosexuals. We're here, we're queer, get used to it. Well, what you need to get used to, those people in the homosexual community, you need to get used to the idea that your lifestyle choice, your alleged lifestyle choice, is going to cause you to lose maybe 15 years of your life expectancy. Huh? There's all kinds of things that are here. And they presume that we have to get used to them. And before it's done, they are going to perhaps have to get used to the good Lord. All right? He's also here, but he doesn't exactly stand up and protest in ways that are observable out on the street. You know, I don't see God marching down the street holding a sign and say, you know, whatever. We don't see that, but it doesn't mean that the day's not coming when he's not coming. And lots of folks may have some serious splaining to do when that happens. What else, Melody?
Well, seniors. The biggest threat to seniors' retirement might be the roof over their heads.
Yep. Article from Yahoo Finance. It says, for many older Americans, the biggest threat to their retirement security just might be the roof over their heads. Many seniors today are carrying mortgage debt in retirement, more seniors today are carrying mortgage debt in retirement than ever before, rising from 22% to 30% from 2001 to 2011. This according to a new report by Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Over the same period, the median mortgage balance for older Americans has nearly doubled from $43,000 to $79,000. As a result, money that otherwise might have been helped buoy their nest egg or cover health care expenses is instead being poured into housing costs. Nearly 60% of 4.4 million retired homeowners in the USA today spend more than 30% of their household income on housing alone. Much of the increase can be attributed to refinancing boom in the 2000s. Now, that refinancing boom made a lot of sense because, as we all knew back then, the prices of homes were certain to keep on rising and rising. We knew that. Because Ben Bernanke announced in 2005 that there had never been a time in American history when the price of housing went down on a national basis. You'd see it decline in a particular city or maybe a particular region, but on a national basis, housing has continued to rise and rise and rise throughout American history, price of housing. And this was a certainty that they could depend on. It was certain to keep rising and rising, and therefore, refinancing your house in the late 1990s and the early 2000s was a no-lose situation. The equity in your house would keep rising faster than the amount of money you took out of the home by refinancing. Housing would be a perpetual money machine. And everyone who had a house could laugh and party and celebrate until the day they died. Just kept on refinancing the house. Get another $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 every so often from refinancing the house, and you're good to go. Except for one little problem. Contrary to previous history, two centuries of history, the prices of homes defined our presumed certainty that they'd always rise and started to fall. Once home prices fell, home equities fell, refinancing became difficult and almost impossible, and the amount of money still owed on home mortgages began to exceed the home's market values. Seeing their homes were underwater, that is to say, worth less than the mortgage, the price of the mortgage, some people therefore abandoned their homes. Others suffered foreclosure as the demand for homes fell and they were no longer viewed as free money machines. And the supply of empty homes rose. The prices of homes in general fell further. Equity in homes fell further, and a downward spiral began. The spiral was diminished by banks that refused to put the foreclosed homes on the market, and the banks thereby restricted the supply of empty homes available for sale and helped stabilize the price, the home prices. The lesson, however, is both obvious and shocking for many. There's no free lunch. You understand? That's the real lesson of this. People have this, oh, I'll just refinance my home. You see how simple we get a free lunch out of the home. All we have to do is go see the banker and they'll give us money to refinance. It'll be simple. Well, people believed in that free lunch. Now people are retired and they still have a mortgage to pay. And now we're going to find out that their belief in the free lunch back in the late 1990s and early 2000s may cause them to skip lunch for a decade or more. They're going to go broke because they were chasing that free lunch. In the end, homeowners who believed that they could refinance and safely take that free lunch out of their home equity because home prices would always rise, or every bit as foolish as the Dutch people who once engaged in the tulip mania. It was just foolishness. Here the article continues. It says, other factors contributing to the problem include a general trend among Americans to buy their first homes later in life, provide small down payments, and borrow against home equity to pay for a variety of expenses. With so much of their wealth invested in their homes, seniors' financial health is far more vulnerable to economic downturns, like the housing crisis of 2008. And I'd add that as senior citizens are foreclosed or choose to abandon their homes to cut costs of living, right? That'll probably happen in the future here. The supply of homes for sale on the market will rise and tend to push the prices of homes in general even lower. Point. We operated on the assumption that you couldn't miss with housing as an investment for a long time, considerable period, probably since World War II. Average person, it might go back. We might be able to trace that inclination, that belief back as far as World War II, the end of World War II. It's one of those fundamental assumptions that, like all fundamental assumptions, is true for a while, and one day it fails. You know, right now, my fundamental assumption is gold is going to go up, up, up. And I know it will. I have no doubt. But I also don't doubt that the day will come when it'll go down. It's going to go to some sort of a peak, and then it's going to go down. We're nowhere near that at this point in time. But the lesson here, you have to look at your fundamental presumptions. What do you think is going to happen? And that lays a foundation for how you invest. If those presumptions change, if you're not aware of your presumptions, if you don't reevaluate them from time to time, you may make some poor investment decisions and wind up in a position like senior citizens who are owning homes that they may no longer be able to afford. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
don't make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival Programs, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
We got a question that came in from Phil. He says, when I purchase Silver Eagles or Canadian Maples, he chooses only the standard issue coins, not the commemorative issues. And he gave an example of the Jessica Lynch coin. He says, is there any possibility that commemorative issue coins that have not been slabbed will appreciate at a greater rate than standard issue coins? And he also adds a P.S. He says, yes, he agrees that we are in a spiritual battle against satanic forces. Commemorative coins. To me, I believe they're novelties. Every once in a while, you can come across a commemorative coin that can do a little extra for whatever reason. The demand of the people with a slow supply, you can get a little bit of an increase out of it. But that does not, I do not want to go out and buy only commemorative coins.
Now, by commemorative, we mean
specialty coins, just like my Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I guess.
It's a commemorative coin. It's a beautiful coin. It's an exciting coin. It's a novelty coin. Do I want to protect my purchasing power by buying commemorative coins? No, I do not. They're gifts. I think they're grist. Just like the gold commemorative, the Olympics, and the $5 and $10 gold commemorative coins. They're just basically melt value. And it really all depends on how you buy these commemorative coins. A lot of these gold commemorative coins are pushed as non-confiscatable, collectible coins and everything else. Well, they're not. They're melt value coins. Sometimes you can get a little bit of premium, like you can with any melt value coin. We can get a little premium out of a 1 ounce gold eagle. Premiums have come down, but they're certainly higher than what they were 10 years ago. 10 years ago, 15, well, 20 years ago, we could sell them for $5 over spot. Today, they're much greater than that. So you can get a little bit of premium, but you buy them for the novelty. You buy them for the beauty. You buy them.
It may have a significance.
But I wouldn't
expect. Family member
who
attended whatever was being commemorated or has a private interest in it.
But I wouldn't expect it to have a greater rate of increase, appreciation.
In other words, they're just bullion
coins. They're just melt value coins. Okay. But they get a lot for them. I mean, he sent me over this 2004 Jessica Lynch commemorative, and it's a PCGS Mint State 69, and it's $139. So you do pay more for an ounce.
$139 for, you mean over spot?
No, for the total cost. And it's just like the Baseball Hall of Fame coins we've been selling. They're $275. And so, excuse me, so you do pay a lot for it. But again, it's desirable. Is it going to go to $800 by the end of the year? Of course not. Of course not. So, again, I don't buy it for...
Well, it's collectible. It becomes collectible, but it's a long-term investment. It may be that it's going to appreciate in price, but only after a number of years, and it becomes truly collectible because they can't find the 800 million of them that they coined at the time. And there's maybe only a few hundred thousand left, and at that point in time, maybe they appreciate in value.
Well, you can look to the Gold Eagles that way, the Mint State 69 and 70 Gold Eagles. There's millions of those minted, and just a slab of few, it really doesn't mean anything. So there is a big difference between having a modern issue coin like a Gold Eagle or a Silver Eagle slabbed versus a commemorative coin that is slabbed. There is a difference. So you should always have a premium with the commemorative coins, but on the modern issue coins, heck, we break them out of the cases sometime just to fill orders on regular bullion coins. It really doesn't mean anything to have a Mint State 70 1-ounce Gold Eagle coin. That coin, perhaps 100 years from now, might make a difference. But in today's world, no, it doesn't. And people pay a lot of money to get those coins slabbed. And a lot of dealers will put those types of coins in IRAs. Why? Because they can get extra money, just like they put proofs in IRA. You don't need a proof in an IRA account. The dealer makes more money on those. That's why he recommends those. You just regular bullion coins for your IRA, and if it's of a substantial amount of funds that you have in an IRA, then you can get the bars. But it's what's suitable for what you're putting in to the account is. Should help determine the type of product that you have. But commemorative coins, they're beautiful. I love my Baseball Hall of Fame. I've given quite a few as gifts. They're beautiful. They're interesting. But to buy them to preserve my purchasing power as an investment against a drop of a declining dollar, no. No, but I think every portfolio can have one.
Okay. I got an article here from Casey, Daily Dispatch. That reads in part, U.S. equity markets are enjoying their 31st straight month without enduring so much as a 10% correction. A modern record by a wide margin. On average, such corrections occur every 18 months. In other words, we're in uncharted territory. Now, this is evidence that we're in uncharted territory. The idea that the stock market, the equity markets, have continued to rise for 31 straight months. Never done that before. Huh? Rise without as much as a 10% correction. We've had a few downstrokes, but 10% correction or more. 31 straight months without that. And this is a modern record by a wide margin. Usually they come in every 18 months. We're in uncharted territory. It's evidence. And we're not only in uncharted territory, it's evidence that the stock markets are being artificially supported. That's why we're breaking the record here. It's just evidence that the markets are being manipulated in order to support. We're going to higher and higher, higher places in the markets. Since the beginning of the year, this is from Casey, Daily Dispatch again. Since the beginning of the year, the average stock in the standard in Standard & Poor's 500 is down 9.3%, while the S&P 500 index is about 1% from its all-time high. Apparently, mega-cap stocks like Apple, Johnson & Johnson, and Berkshire Hathaway, among a handful of others, are holding up the index. It appears that a decent performance of a couple of gigantic companies masks underlying weakness in the stock market. This is the latest in a series of mounting signs that the market may finally be entering a long overdue swoon or worse. In other words, they're just saying, look, we usually get a correction every 18 months, 10% or more in the stock market. Haven't had one for 31 months. Something strange is going on. We're in uncharted territory, but we are due for a correction in the equities markets. That's all they're saying. Statistically. We're not giving you prophecy. We're just saying statistically they get one every 18 months. We've gone 31 months without a correction. Never done it before. Therefore, they're saying we may be sitting on the edge of something, a significant correction in the equities markets. We'll watch. And of course we are. But when? There's always the question. We can see it coming. I mean, anybody who looks at this understands, I think you understand pretty much where we're going, but nobody knows when we're going to get there. You know, and that includes PhDs and the guy who's driving a cab. Nobody knows when we're going to get there. We all know where we're going, but we don't know when we're going to get there, and we're all betting, well, a lot of us are betting that we aren't going to get there in the next weeks or months. There's still more time to maneuver, still more time to be irresponsible, and we can probably, and with any luck at all, we'll be able to skate past these problems, and that might even be true. But it's not likely, and it's not probable, and it's just, the report here is just one more evidence. We might be getting close to that moment when we have a significant correction. What else, Melody? Let me say one other thing. Well, I'll do it on the next one. We'll do it on the next article here.
Go right ahead.
Well, what I was going to talk about were false assumptions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about the stock market. Most people look at it and they say the stock market has been going up for 31 consecutive months. And this is just human nature. It's nothing wicked or wrong. It's just the way we look at things. If it's been going up for 31 months, it naturally follows. It must be going up for 32 and then 33 and then 34. And that's how we tend to look at things. But we could also look at it and say, you know, it's the first time it's ever done 31 months going up without a significant correction. And that becomes evidence not that it's necessarily going to go to 32 or 33 or 34. It's evidence that we should be bouncing back toward that 18-month norm at some point in the future. We should see an end to this stretch in the markets. And it just goes to people are inclined to make assumptions. You know? I talked about it a little bit earlier. Ben Bernanke in 2005 was asked about housing prices being out of control. 2005. This is a couple years before we had the housing collapse in this country or significant decline. And Bernanke responded saying, well, I guess I don't buy your premise. It's pretty unlikely possibility. We've never had a decline in home prices on a nationwide basis. And I talked about that earlier in the program. Because we'd never had that decline, it was assumed we never could have that decline. The Federal Reserve and government held on to that assumption for several decades after World War II. Again, because we'd never had a decline in home prices on a nationwide basis, it was presumed that we never could have that decline. And economic policies were advanced and implemented based on the assumption that on a national basis, the price of homes would continue to rise until Gabriel blew his horn. That assumption laid the foundation for subprime borrowers and liar's loans. After all, what difference did it make if home buyers were actually qualified for credit? So long as the prices of homes continued to rise, it didn't matter if a particular borrower took out a mortgage for, say, $200,000 and then defaulted. By the time the bank foreclosed and regained title to the house, rising prices would put the price of the house up to, say, maybe $250,000. As long as a house was used as collateral to secure the original mortgage and the price of homes on a national basis were sure to rise, no matter what, it seemed almost improbable for the nation's banks to lose, even if they loaned currency to liars and subprime borrowers. Sure, banks would lose in some communities, and on some homes it was inevitable that they didn't all go up. We know that. But on a national basis, the banking business was seemingly guaranteed to generate a profit from home loans because, ta-da, home prices had never gone down on a national basis. Then home prices began to decline around 2007. That decline precipitated the Great Recession, nearly caused the Greater Depression, and might yet be blamed for a national or even global depression. Again, point, lesson, be constantly vigilant to reconsider your basic assumptions. And this means you've even got to figure, what are your basic assumptions? What are they? These are your fundamentals. You got to look and see, what are the fundamentals? What is the basis for my investment decision? It can't be just because everybody else is doing it. Well, I guess it can be, but it's certainly not an ideal assumption. It's not a reliable assumption. When everybody else is doing it, that's probably evidence, particularly in terms of investments, that you don't want to do it. This whole idea behind the contrarian investment scheme. You buy low and you sell high. That's how you make a profit. If you're going to buy when the prices are low, you are necessarily buying when everybody says that's a piece of trash. You can't make money in that market. If you sell high, you're selling when everybody says, oh, that's great, you can't lose. If you go against, if you're going to buy low and sell high, you have to be a contrarian. You have to reject doing things just because everyone else is doing them. In fact, when you see everyone else doing them, maybe that's a good time to just sit back and say, this is about to blow up. This can't last. Oh, you got to know your presumptions. What are your presumptions? Your assumptions. Know them, understand them, and watch them closely. To see if they change. Is there reason to believe that some of your fundamental presumptions have changed? If they have, then you have to change your investment. Then you have to reconsider your investment strategy and your investment choices. Huh? You change when your assumptions change. That's when you change. But you got to know those assumptions. You got to know what they are, and you have to be able to keep an eye on them. I think where are we right now? We've got about a minute left before we take our break.
I think when people take that advice, they will control, and maybe perhaps control is the wrong word, but their financial planners. They will eliminate that financial planner dictating what they should own and how their money should be handled.
I agree.
They should be involved in that situation. And time and time again, I hear, well, we've been dealing with this financial planner, and financial planners become your friend. They shouldn't be your friend. Your financial planner should not be a friend. And many times they're family member friend. They've been dealing with your family since your grandfather, and it's just been passed on. And but by knowing what you just talked about, it does help to say no to your financial planner and to guide him into doing things that he might not normally suggest.
He won't take your guidance, though. If he's licensed, he's probably got to be prepared to prove that whatever financial advice he gave pretty much followed the herd. It was an idea that was generally accepted, because if he says, I told them to invest in toothpick stock, well, if you sue him because it was a bad investment, he's going to say, well, everybody was doing it. If he can't say everyone was doing it, his exposure to liability is higher. He is unlikely to break away from the herd, and that means he's unlikely to buy low or sell high.
That's true. But it's the people's money, and they should be able to do what they want to with it. You have to be strong if you want to do something.
That's all.
I had a client that her financial planner actually created a form for her to sign when she sold some of her paper investments to buy gold. She had to sign this form in order for them to get
absolve him from liability.
Because she was buying gold, and it was against his advice.
Yep.
And she did it anyway, and her investments far outpaced what his paper investments.
Well, I understand. We're going to have to take a break here, folks. I'm Alfred Addis with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. As you know, 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver coin needs, here's an article from the Washington Times. Headline is Ted Cruz releases 76-item list of lawless Obama actions. Senator Ted Cruz, he's a Republican from Texas, released a list that details 76 different ways President Obama and his administration have committed lawless actions. The Legal Limit Report number 4, the Obama administration's abuse of power, that's the title of the document. In that document, he includes this brief statement reported by The Blaze, which said, quote, rather than honor his duty, President Obama has openly defied it by repeatedly suspending, delaying, and waiving portions of the laws that he is charged to enforce. When President Obama disagreed with federal immigration laws, he instructed the Justice Department to cease enforcing the laws. He did the same thing with federal welfare law, drug laws, and the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. The article continues, says among the actions Mr. Obama has taken, Mr. Obama has taken an executive piecemeal approach to implementing the DREAM Act and immigration reform. Mr. Obama's illegally delayed Obamacare verification of eligibility for health care subsidies. Illegally delayed Obamacare verification of eligibility for health care subsidies. And Mr. Obama has illegally revealed the existence of sealed indictments in the Benghazi investigation. The administration hasn't yet issued a response to Senator Cruz, the report by Senator Cruz. You can get a copy of the report. It's available on the internet. It can be found, but I won't read the URL because there's no way any of you could write it down as fast as I'd wind up saying it. The point. This is serious business. A United States senator has accused the president of violating the law in 76 specific instances. This isn't just an oddity where we kind of shake our heads and wink. Obama, you just can't make him obey the law, can you? You know, we're just laughing about it, gloat about it. The truth of the matter is the man is engaged in treason. He is not carrying out his oath of office. President Obama is supposed to be the head of the executive branch of government in this country. He is there to execute the laws. He's there to see that the laws are enforced. It's not his job to decide which laws are good, bad, or indifferent. That's up to Congress. And if Congress passes the laws, no matter how idiotic they may be, Obama's obligation is to enforce those laws. Obama is choosing not to do so, and no one is doing much about it. Insofar as we allow Obama to pick and choose which laws he wants to enforce and how he wants to enforce them or ignore them, we're turning this country into something like a monarchy, where one man, the president, can decide everything in the country. And the rest of us are all just, not just us, the Supreme Court, they're irrelevant, Congress is irrelevant. The only thing counts is the executive branch, and most particularly the president. If he's willing to do something, it gets done. If he's not, it doesn't get done. And it doesn't matter whether he is doing something that is constitutional or unconstitutional, beneficial to the general welfare of the people of the United States of America, or treasonous. He becomes a law unto himself. And we wind up caught in a political system where we have rule by men rather than rule by law. The idea behind rule by law is that laws are passed and we're all equally subject to these laws. The idea behind rule by men is that there are people in positions of power and whatever they say goes. And it doesn't matter if it's constitutional, unconstitutional, insane. It makes no difference. That's rule by men. We are sliding into that world where we have rule by men rather than rule by law. And part of the evidence of that, when I say rule by men, I can point to Obama, but we could include Congress in this description. Congress passes laws on a fairly regular basis that are at least arguably unconstitutional and maybe verifiably unconstitutional. And Congress just goes ahead and doesn't matter if it feels good, do it. That's their idea. When it comes to passing law, if it feels good, do it. You know? We have congressmen voting for laws that they haven't even read. And from my understanding, that's the majority of the laws that are enacted by Congress are no longer read by Congress. This is a terrible problem. Because it was originally, the Supreme Court has ruled repeatedly, observed repeatedly, that the essence of every law is congressional intent. And whenever a phrase in the law, a sentence, phrase, a paragraph, there's a law out there. And one person says it means one thing, and another person says, no, it doesn't, it means this. And the dispute because the language is ambiguous and we can't exactly, well, the first guy might be right. It might mean what he says, but it could be the second guy is right. Reading the law, it might be what he says too. So how does the Supreme Court decide the case when the case finally reaches the Supreme Court? How do they decide whether a fixed number of words means one thing or they mean something else? And the answer is the Supreme Court historically goes back to review the hearings in Congress and whatever record there is in the congressional record, the transcripts of the hearings they had in Congress, and they look at it, they listen to it, they say, what did Congress intend when they wrote this? The Supreme Court says, yeah, you people are both right in this regard. The language in this particular sentence, paragraph, whatever, is ambiguous. It might mean A, it might mean B. We can't tell from just reading it. Both arguments are correct. It could be correctly interpreted in either way, so let's go back and see what Congress was talking about when they passed the law. What was their intent? Despite what they wrote, what did they intend? Congressional intent is the essence of the law. This is an established principle. It's been true for probably since this country began. What is the intent of a law? What's the congressional intent of a law that congressmen didn't bother to read? For example, you all saw where Nancy Pelosi told the Congress, she said, you have to vote for it, and then you can see what's inside it. And the morons in Congress went right along with that. And they voted for Obamacare. They did something similar for the National Defense Authorization Act. They voted for that before it was even, they didn't even have printed copies. No one had a copy to read. Now, how can there be any congressional intent when no one in Congress read the act before the act was voted for, enacted? There is no congressional intent. The point I'm trying to get to is we are increasingly ruled by a cadre of men sitting in Washington, congressmen, senators, federal judges, President of the United States, Vice President, if you care to count him. And they get to do pretty much anything they want without being bound by the Constitution of the United States. And they don't want to be bound. They don't want to obey the law. And the Constitution is law. And whose law is it? It's your law. It's my law. It's the people's law. Read the Constitution. It says, we the people, in order to form a more perfect union. And they go on, and then they do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. We the people made that law. That's the people's law. The government wants to pass its own laws. They say, we don't have to listen to people, but the people have to listen to us. They went, you and me, oh, yeah, you better sign up. You better sign up to obey whatever it is they come up with. No matter how stupid, self-destructive, suicidal. Doesn't matter. Are they encouraging illegal aliens to invade this country? Yes. Is it wrong? Of course. Does it matter? No. How about the jobs when they dropped tariffs and they shipped jobs over to Asia, China, and whatever? Industries and jobs disappeared. It started with NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, and Ross Perot warned us back in 1992, if you enact that treaty, there'll be a giant sucking sound as the jobs flow out of this country. When you knock the tariff down, you forced Americans to compete head-on with cheap labor all over the world. And there can only be one result, the standard of living. Number one, jobs will leave to go to the cheaper jobs in South America, Central America, Mexico. Jobs will, and when new treaties came through GATT and World Trade Organization agreements and so on, jobs wound up going to China. It's going to happen. It's going to happen, and it is inevitable that the wage scale for Americans are forced to compete directly with foreign labor. Our wage scale has to go down. The American dream has to be lost. We can no longer assume that our children will live better lives than we did. This is happening, and it's not, and me saying so, this isn't just a radical hyperbole. This isn't some bizarre conspiracy theory. The government does this. They've done this. And they do it because they're not concerned about the general welfare of the American people. They're concerned with what's best for special interests, and by special interests, they mean generally. There's some exceptions. But they mean rich interests who pay congressmen to front for bills that will allow rich people to take even more money from the middle class and from the lower classes. We have legalized theft, and Congress doesn't blink an eye. No one is fighting to sustain the law that we call the Constitution of the United States. No one is, which is, and I've said it on this program before, it is a profoundly anti-government document. The purpose, the fundamental purpose of the Constitution of the United States was to provide protections for the people of the states of the Union against the government, the national government that was being created by the Constitution. Three branches of government to keep the government fighting with itself. The right to keep and bear arms. And it's there in the preamble to the Bill of Rights. It tells us the purpose of the Bill of Rights was to prevent misconstruction or abuse of the powers of the Constitution. Who had powers under the Constitution? Federal officials, federal employees. They have powers. I don't have any powers under the Constitution. I may have rights, but not powers. The purpose of the entire 10 amendments for the Bill of Rights was to, as expressed by Congress, was to prevent misconstruction or abuse of the powers of the Constitution. Every bit of those first 10 rights are intended to protect the people of the states against the federal government. They understood the dangers of creating that national/federal government. They knew that it was part of human nature. Everybody goes to government. They are eager to grab more power, more money, more whatever. And the dangers. And they gave us a Constitution that would help protect us against those people. But we've forgotten the purpose of the Constitution. And we have been dumbed down to where we don't necessarily understand what's happening all the time. And we are eager to trust people who claim they are trustworthy but turn out to be worthless. And as a result, we have a big problem. We have rule by man right now rather than rule by law, in large measure because we the people have stopped enforcing the people's law, which is the Constitution of the United States. I'm Alfred Adask. I'm out of here until next Monday. I'll be back with Melody. And I want to thank all of you for listening. Hope you have a good weekend. Happy Mother's Day. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer.
Bye-bye.
Seems to be a single penny left for me.